Are Here, and I'm your host, Brian Beatty. Welcome to our first edition. Our theme this month is Life Goes On, because maybe you've heard 2012 is the year that the Mayans predicted the world would end. December 21st, 2012 to be exact. According to the Mayan prediction anyway, which I predict is wrong. And not just because the prophets of this ancient civilization knew nothing of our Gregorian calendar system. I'm also suspect of the predictability of the Mayans because they did such a poor job seeing the demise of their own culture coming. By which I mean the Spanish. But I'm not picking on the Mayans, because I doubt anybody who goes around announcing on any given day that the end is nigh. Megalomaniacal cult leaders, as well as the charismatic kind. Fundamentalist religious figureheads asking true believers to tithe their entire life savings before they all ascend to heaven. Parents whose limited coping skills seem to be no match for their misbehaving children. Politicians trying to terrify the electorate into voting for them. Panhandlers holding rumpled cardboard signs next to highway on-ramps. Broken-hearted teenagers grappling with the rejection of their first true loves. Comic book writers and readers and characters. The clinically depressed. I suspect that it's been like this since before we poked our head out of those first caves. Surviving day one to experience day two seemed like such a daunting, overwhelming impossibility for some frightened primitive human that a dire warning was painted on the cave wall that nobody was going to make it through the night. Of course, the irony is that the world never ends as we've been warned it will, and yet it does end every day. The old, the infirm, the accident-prone, and those unfortunate enough to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. They die every day, and often without anyone predicting it. And no matter what we may profess to believe, I think we still seem surprised when someone dies because we are not entirely sure what happens next. Which brings us to this edition's featured work. It's by Britt Amit, and it's called Oh Hell.
Hello, my name is Katie, and I'm a representative with the Hereafter Housing Authority. I'm here tonight to talk to you about the afterlife. And I don't want you to think of me as a teacher or a mentor. Think of me more as a fellow passenger on a collision course with the great enigma. What happens to us after we die? Speaking of which, I'm a firm believer in teaching by example, so if you don't mind, I'd like to share my story with you. It all started about 6 weeks ago. I was driving home in commuter hell when all of a sudden I got this text message from this absolutely wonderful man I'd just started dating. His wife had come home unexpectedly, so we'd have to reschedule our appointment. So, seeing as I had nothing else to do, I decided to text him back. And wouldn't you know, some ding-dong crashed into me when I just gently swerved into his lane. The crash was magnificent, so much fire and four cars piled up. But alas, I shucked off this mortal coil. Now, I had never believed in the afterlife. I didn't believe in religion as a rule, particularly in financial matters. Like, I always wanted to say, okay, with my $5 offering, does that come with a double soy latte? So I was rather shocked when I died and did not dissolve into utter nothingness, but ascended to the Hereafter Housing Authority, the greatest bureaucracy outside of Washington, D.C., and the first stop on our journey in the afterlife. This is where we all go to discover where we'll be living for the rest of eternity, heaven, hell, that sort of thing. Well, I was given a counselor. His name was Ernie. And Ernie and I sat down with my life file. And towards the end of going through my life, Ernie was just kind of shaking his head a little.
Oh, Katie, you were a busy little bee in your life, weren't you? But maybe a little bit too busy, because you never really thought about where you might like to live post-mortem.
And I said, when you say where I might like to live post-mortem, does that mean where I might like to live after I died? Listen, Ernie, I've got one word for you. Atheist.
True, true, true. Salt right here in your file. But, you know, I have always found that behind every good atheist is a true believer. And, you know, everybody thinks about where she might like to live after she dies at least once in her life. What it looks like, what kind of food they have there. And, you know, those thoughts are very important to us here at the Hereafter Housing Authority because we use them as a sort of blueprint to construct your everlasting abode.
Unfortunately, I had never thought about the afterlife, so Ernie and some of his pals put their halos together, and I guess they found some obscure reference, some stray thought or other I'd had during my lifetime, that they were able to expand upon and elaborate into my everlasting abode. Ernie walked me to the Hereafter Housing trolley that would take me to my new home. I bored it with an absolute mass of those right-wing Christian conservatives. Apparently, they had been aboard a 747 when it crashed in Outer Mongolia. So much for God looking after his chosen ones. Well, I knew precisely where they would be spending all of eternity, so I was not at all surprised when the trolley halted at the mouth of a tunnel, spewing brimstone in the wails of the damned. I bid them a fond farewell. Have a nice day. But, you know, not one of them got out of their seat. In fact, they all turned around and looked at me. Then the conductor got out of his seat, walked down the aisle, took me by the arm, and tossed me off the trolley. I was rather confused, particularly when my welcoming party, horns and pitchforks, conducted me to a boiling tar pit. They told me I'd be languishing here with the other sinners until kingdom come. Ernie dropped by the next day to see what I thought of my new accommodations. To be quite honest, it was rather difficult carrying on a conversation because every time I bobbed to the surface, the little devils would give me jabs with their pitchforks. But I was able to convey that there had been a mistake because I knew for a fact that I had never thought of anything, not even my ex-husband's polluted mind, as a boiling tar pit. Well, I have to hand it to Ernie. He whisked me right out of there and off to a safe house in the edge of the pit, and we just chuckled over the misunderstanding. You see, Ernie and his pals had condemned me to a lower rig of Dante's Inferno because I had once read the book in college. They thought that because the location was familiar to me, I might find it comfortable. Ernie said he would take care of that, so that night as I was tucking into bed at the safe house, finishing off a pint of that really good Ecto eggnog and putting some salve on my pitchfork wounds, I suddenly heard a loud gong. And the next thing I knew, I was in Hades with my good pals Achilles and Medusa.
Oh, Katie, I'm so sorry, Ernie said when he paid me his now usual visit. But you know, you did read a lot of those Greeks and Romans as a youngster, and I thought you might like hanging out with some of those strapping Trojans.
I did not, which is probably why I next found myself hanging out with Anubis. Now, the name Anubis may be familiar to you from this rather great documentary that was on PBS a few years ago about ancient Egypt and its mythologies. I myself had seen it a couple of times, and knowing now how the Hereafter Housing Authority worked, I figured that was probably why I was spending so much time with ancient Egypt's god of the underworld. But I can't complain. I mean, Anubis and his animal-headed god friends, they were so thrilled to have me there. I mean, owing to the dead status of their religion, of course. They hadn't had many new arrivals in thousands of years. So they put on the dog for me, really fed it up, you know, flowing honey and dancing slave girls. But that did not keep them from putting me through all the trials and tests that were necessary as part of their religion to prove that I, as so, was worthy of their so-called paradise. For example, I was made to ride the back of a lumpy cow across a scorching desert and swim a fire lake and do battle with a giant snake. But my all-time favorite was placing my heart on a scale with a feather. No, no, Anubis, let me get this straight here. Are you saying that if my heart is heavier than this feather right here, I will be devoured by this alligator-headed thing slobbering on my shoes?
Well, I choose to be positive about these things, said Anubis. I like to think that a lifetime of good deeds has made your heart lighter than a feather. And as a point of clarification, that is Armin, the crocodile, not alligator-headed god. He gets very touchy about these things.
My heart, lighter than a feather. I did not need to be a physicist to know how this was going to work out. I sent an invitation to Ernie to visit me ASAP. And he did. But not before I'd had my intimate experience with a pair of crocodile jaws. So if I may give you a tiny piece of advice. Tonight, when you're at home and you're laying your head on the pillow and your thoughts stray to hot places, for example, don't think hell. Think Hawaii. Think hot tubs and hot men. Because whether or not you believe in the afterlife, they will give it to you anyway.
This has been Oh Hell by Brett Ahmet. Brett has performed at Two Chairs Telling, the Arts Alliance's performance series, and Altered Aesthetics. She is the founder and director of Twin Cities radio play troupe, Deadbeats Theater. Thanks for listening to our first edition. February's edition will be themed The Heart of the Matter. The entire You Are Here editorial calendar for 2012, submission guidelines, and more are available anytime at mnartist.org. You Are Here is a monthly literary podcast production of mnartists.org. MNArtists.org is a joint project of the Walker Art Center and the McKnight Foundation. The mission of MNArtists.org is to improve the lives of Minnesota artists and provide access to and engagement with Minnesota's arts culture.